If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Better with Dr. Erica, hosted by Dr. Erica, provides support and guidance in navigating stress-related challenges to transform your relationship to self-care. Each episode arms you with the tools needed to be better, do better, and live better. There was an incredible episode that you should check out called Touch and Connections as Tools for Healing and Better Mental Health. In this episode, her guest breaks down ways to use physical touch as a form of healing for trauma and grief. Check out Better with Dr. Erica on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Iowa Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 102 of the podcast. If you're a new listener, I want to welcome you. Iowa Health is your place for trusted health guidance and resource. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and experience together on the planet. And if you love the thoughtful and informative content you get here, maybe it's time to consider becoming a health amplifier today. You can support this community over at patreon.com/highwaytohealth. And you can also scroll down the show notes on the app that you're listening to right now. Every dollar goes towards the development of resource toward a more integrative approach to care. Thanks for all your support. Imagine your child is sick, and you've discovered that there's something you can do to bring them relief, but you must break the law in order to help them. Wediatrics, a covert medical mission, is a documentary which covers the lives of families living in states where the laws prevent the use of cannabis under medical supervision. Parents who travel across state lines to bring back compounds for their children run the risk of being charged with severe medical neglect, even for the use of CBD with their kids, a compound well known to alleviate seizure severity. I got a chance to speak with the co-producer of the film, Erin O'Hearn, about why, as a journalist, she felt compelled to put her energy into this subject and what she learned in the process. The film's now streaming on Google Play, Apple TV, and Amazon. I encourage anyone who's skeptical about the use of cannabis medicinally for children to watch it. It also gives insight into how we could make better use of cannabis compounds for other populations as well. And stick around for my conversation with Dr. Bonnie Goldstein in part two of this series. She advised on the film and shares her experience and the science of how cannabinoids regulate the brain, gut, and improve immune function. Here's my conversation with Erin O'Hearn. So you're in Chicago, is that right?
No, I'm actually in Philadelphia.
Oh, you're in Philadelphia. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And outside. And how did you get involved in this subject matter in the first place?
Well, the subject matter, I still work part time as a reporter and anchor for the ABC affiliate here in Philadelphia. And a few years ago, I was doing sort of a lifestyle piece on a woman who had just released a cookbook, like an allergen-free cookbook based on her son's experience. And he had gastrointestinal issues because he was very on the very severe end of autism. So I was interviewing her about the cookbook, and she started telling me that if I ever wanted to do a story on medical marijuana and how it benefits autism and relief, you know, bring some relief to the symptoms associated with it, that I should talk to her. And I was a little bit taken back because it wasn't really the subject matter I was expecting to go into.
Right.
When you're talking about a cookbook, an allergen-free cookbook. And so I just started asking her questions, and she essentially told me that there was a whole network of parents that would take turns going back and forth to Colorado to a specific grower, because at the time, the majority of states did not have a medical cannabis program. And even if they had one, autism or any sort of pediatric use of medical cannabis was not a qualifying condition.
Yeah.
So they were essentially, you know, smuggling, for lack of a better word, oils and tinctures back to their children. And I was also working at the time with my friends, Kimberly and John Erhard, who were the principals of Oaks Media and Open Water Studios, the production company that put this documentary out.
Yeah.
And I started telling them about this, and they said, this is an enormous story. Like, it could impact so many different people.
Yeah.
And so we spent about a year trying to just gather information and knowledge and obviously reach out to these families and see if they would be willing to participate, because that's a whole different, you know, ball game. It's one thing to say, all right, I'm going to stash something in my luggage and right. hope that it works. It's another thing to go public when you have a lot of eyes on you and a medical community that's still skeptical
yeah.
of this.
And that, I mean, it was surprising to watch. And you know, as you know, I saw and did an interview with Abby Epstein about, you know, they were kind of working more on how medical cannabis would shrink tumors. This was right. more, this was more focused on seizures and autism.
Correct.
And it was just, I was surprised that these parents were taking us along for this ride, which was like, in most people's cases, it was their first time even doing anything like this.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people asked when we were producing the film, and obviously now that the film's released, they were saying, how did you get these families to agree
yeah.
to go on the documentary? Because you're essentially exposing their quote unquote secret, right?
Right.
Well, we spent a lot of time getting to know these families personally, and we really went over with them the risks versus the benefits of participating in this project. And not every family that we contacted agreed in the end.
Yeah,
to be
I'm
part
sure.
of the documentary. I mean, there were a lot of families who backed out. There were a lot of families who were maybe a part of a blended family who, you know, the one parent said yes and the other said
right,
no.
Right, right.
But in the end, the families that did decide to participate did it because they felt that there was a larger cause here.
Yeah.
Because they knew they weren't the only ones suffering. And so if by sort of exposing themselves and putting their life and their life's struggles on display, then maybe, just maybe, someone would listen and say, these are really screwed up laws and yeah. we really need to do some more research on this, because it's not fair that, number one, children with essentially no hope, I mean, there's no other medication
right.
for them, don't have access to this. And number two, it's really not fair to say that a family in one state should be allowed to have access to it, and in another, they're denied, or not even just denied, arrested
right.
for, you know, dealing with CPS.
Yeah.
So that's where, you know, it's been a really interesting journey, and that was kind of our motive for the documentary.
And it was surprising to me. So CPS meaning Child Protective Services.
Correct.
So what they were being accused of was harming a minor, basically, by not giving them the other medication or supplementing with CBD, THC, you know, combination,
yeah.
whatever ratio was working best.
Mm-hmm.
And that just by doing that and by letting anyone know, and in one case it was like the school nurse or something, right? That called CPS on them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't really know for sure.
Right, right.
The family has a hunch, and I don't want to go. I mean, the point wasn't to go accuse
no,
because it could have been anyone.
But just that it can happen that easily, that you know, a child having a problem at school, suddenly they find out that the child is, the parents are using CBD for seizures, and all of a sudden they're in trouble.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point that it wasn't necessarily that they were using, for instance, the family that you're referring to, the Selvas, their daughter had seizures, and they were in California, which has the most progressive cannabis laws, both medicinally and recreationally,
yeah.
decades, really. They got in trouble because, not because the substance that they were using was illegal, but because the doctor said they should be using a pharmaceutical drug
instead,
approved,
right, right.
And essentially charging them with medical neglect. So yeah. it wasn't, that's where there's so many loopholes, and that the laws just are so unclear. And now you're putting a family who, and by the way, like, the research supports the use of CBD oil
yeah.
for seizures. I mean, that isn't, but just because someone's saying, well, they're giving them that and not this.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it was really shocking because the whole thing was caught on. Maria Salva took it on tape, and it's on the movie. But
just how kind of rough they were with you know, approaching them in the first place. Like they could have easily given them some heads up and said, we need to talk to you, there's something going on. Instead, just coming straight in and taking the child without any real solid knowledge of what's going on.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, they kept saying, and I won't give too much away, but when you watch the movie, the people who it was a combination of police and child protective services, but they come in and they tried to be reassuring and saying, it's just one child that we're taking.
Right.
Like, how is that? Like, okay, fine. We have two to spare. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And it's not their fault. I mean, they have a job to execute. And the point of showing that wasn't to sort of come down on the officers or the representative from CPS. It's just to show that even the task that they're given doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And it's not right, because this was really a loving family, right?
Yeah.
Who were trying to really help their daughter. And one of the points that they made was, you're going to make it worse by taking her away, because then she won't have access to any of the medication that she needs.
And so for anybody who doesn't understand why this is a problem, it gets back to this, to marijuana or THC being a Schedule I drug, right? And
correct.
And that's where this whole thing lies. And yet things like cocaine and a lot of forms of opiates are Schedule II, and we know the side effects of those drugs. So why are we stuck at this impasse with cannabis being a Schedule I?
I mean, I can't answer that. If I did, I think that it would be the most probably obscene and obnoxious reply. So I'll just say, I don't know. But
I'm curious about you did a lot of digging in this one. What are you noticing?
There's a lot of different reasons. I mean, the whole reason behind cannabis, you know, being prohibited goes back decades and has to do with just a social injustice problem. So, and then, you know, there was really an effort to put people of brown and black people and Latinx people in prison or hold them to different standards. And that this was the way to do it.
Right.
And, you know, previously for centuries, medical cannabis was used for a variety of conditions. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was the number one prescribed medicine for everything from, you know, depression to constipation there's just a variety of illnesses and disorders it was used to treat. You know, I think that the federal government, there has been such a stigma with marijuana. It was sort of the forefront of the war on drugs, and it was labeled as a gateway drug. And, you know, between the pharmaceutical companies understanding perhaps the power of this plant and not wanting people to understand or take advantage of the fact that you could grow it in your backyard or you could get it from a farmer as opposed to having this synthetic version in a lab that would cost, you know, much more money and that would be much more beneficial to the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons, Jeremy, that it could, you know, it's so complicated and so convoluted right now. And I think that it's a really antiquated way of thinking. And everybody needs to realize that, you know, social issues evolve. I mean, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, I was just watching this morning, maybe it was longer than that, probably 15. But, you know, President Obama wasn't for same-sex marriage.
Right.
You know, obviously, we've evolved.
Yeah.
And so that's what everybody sort of has to look at, including the government.
Yeah. I mean, I know there was this big reefer madness campaign that went back and, you know, I've, this is the third time I've covered this on the podcast. So I've gotten to, you know, study a little bit, but basically it goes back to the jazz era when it was becoming a sort of a common recreational drug. And they assumed that was sort of part of like the loosening up of culture that was starting to happen and interracial dating and all that stuff. And so it seemed like the biggest part of the campaign around the whole reefer madness thing kind of came around that. And then in the late 60s, the war on drugs stuff started, which was, again, probably somewhat racially driven or socioeconomically driven. But then I think at this point, we're almost at a point where it is about positioning as pharma. I mean, it seems like that's the one thing that's starting to happen now is who's going to make the money on it now is probably going to be mostly white male-led companies.
Yeah, that's right. So that's sort of how it's coming full circle. And it's irritating, to say the least, because it was used really to oppress a certain part of the population, right? And now that there is somewhat of an acceptance of it, both medicinally and recreationally. I mean, I think it's like 80% of the United States believes it should be legal both as a medicine and a social lubricant.
Yeah.
But the people at the head of these dispensaries and sort of the branding behind the medicine and growing. They're all the same people you see in Congress.
Right. And I saw that there's a new bill being proposed. I mean, there was one in the last presidency as well, but there's a new bill being proposed by the House for legalization, you know, so that it's covered state to state, mm-hmm. which would, I mean, that would be a huge thing for these parents who are in the film. But it seems like, and but the other question I have with all that stuff still too is like, it's the research part of things that we're just not allowing to happen in the states. So it's not just the legalization of the product, but to actually free that up, because as the doctor in Israel, I forget his name now, but he was kind of considered the father. Of cannabis research. And, mm-hmm. you know, because they are federally able to do the research, they're going to lead the way basically in terms of how this stuff can be used. And, mm-hmm. and we should be involved as a country if we want this to sort of happen the right way and also happen in clean ways so that people aren't, you know, I think this happens a lot with new medical activity of any sort, is that you get sort of these fringe people who are working on trying to create things, but then there's always someone on the side who's trying to make money off of that new fringe thing happening
right.
that's not legal. And so it seems like that's where we're kind of stuck right now. This guy in Colorado who's doing all this work, the botanist, is doing some amazing work, and you can just tell. And I'm, as somebody who has a private practice and works with, I happen to have a particular interest in this subject because I'm a craniosacral therapist, mm-hmm. and I've worked with autism and seizure with kids. And mm-hmm. so I can tell just from what that guy's doing that he's trying everything he can to help, you know, given what he has, but also trying to let them know that you could get in a lot of trouble for this. I understand this is like a last ditch thing for you, but that mm-hmm. you have to be, you know, so careful, and just changing that Schedule I status to start would be the seems like the first big step, right?
Yeah, I mean, so it's to your point, it's important for two reasons. Number one, for the accessibility for the parents, and number two, because as a Schedule I, the research that the United States is allowed to do collectively is limited. Yeah. And there has been a lot of money, millions and billions of dollars put into cannabis research, but it's all been on the negative effects of cannabis.
Yeah.
And so we need to have some continuity between the states, because the whole point of research, and you know this, is to build on what previous generation or the team before you already found out, or otherwise you're starting from zero every time, and that doesn't really make for a productive research method. So you know, when we were talking to the doctors in Israel, they said, we've been doing this for 50 years because we've been able to do it, because they don't have the same laws, but we need help. Like, we're a small country, and the United States obviously has many more resources and more money, and we need an international, and it wasn't just the United States that we're talking about. You know, Dr. Mushulam said, we need an international collaboration on this. And it cannot be, you know, the devil in one area and an angel in another. It just doesn't make sense. And, you know, the other point that you were making about getting into dangerous situations is that the makeup of medical cannabis, and really cannabis in general, has been overly simplified into CBD and THC.
Right.
So people look at it and say CBD good, THC bad, because THC is the element that creates that psychoactive effect, right? And so if you just take the CBD, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's the part of the plant that is an anti-inflammatory, and you don't get any hallucinations, and you're not high. And that's not... It's much more complex. There's a lot of CBD elements to it and different THC elements. And part of what helps children who are suffering because they're on the autism spectrum is the synergy of the plant.
Right.
So it's not, you can't just extract one part of it and expect it to work. And there's a black market out there. There's CBD oil that's not CBD. It has nothing to do with... So people who are desperate say, oh gosh, you know what, this could really help, but I'm too afraid to travel, and I found it online here, and I'm going to get it. You don't know what you're giving your child.
Right.
Or yourself, for that matter.
Yeah.
So there has to be some intervention by the government to regulate it.
Yeah.
And to make sure that it's safe to use, because it can be used in a safe way.
Yeah. And with that, you know, the botanicals that are being worked with in this way, there's hundreds of different, you know, components to each of these. It's not just simply those two, THC, CBD, but, you know, there's all these like micro parts that are also need to be in the mix. And someone like this who's working on this is trying a whole bunch of different combinations with different mm-hmm. kinds of conditions. And they even mentioned, it was interesting because one of the parents even said that they brought, you know, all the different things that they had done with their child, you know, from physical therapy, occupational right. therapy, you know, massage, craniosacral therapy, all these different things. And I know just from working with autistic kids and with seizure that I'm only going to be one piece of this. And
right.
I think my role is always to kind of just boost the system to be able to work well, because the thing that we already, you know, this is one of those things that people don't realize, and you guys did a great job in the film of talking about this, is that our endocannabinoid system is this built-in thing. We have these receptors for a reason, because our mm-hmm. body knows how to work with these things, just like we have opiate receptors. Mm-hmm. And that even on from the internal environment, there's an internal chemistry that's going on that's allowing all these kinds of interactions to happen too. So, you know, mm-hmm. from my perspective, I'm just thinking about how can I boost the way this system works as a whole, so that when they do get something like whatever they're using to treat something, that's working as effectively as possible too.
That's
another one of those pieces where I think we get so into thinking about one thing has to be the magic bullet, but never is going to be that's going to be the case.
Ever. With anything positive or negative,
right?
mean, if there was a whole, I don't want to get into this topic because it gets really complicated, but, you know, if you talk about how difficult it was for parents to reconcile, why did I get this autism diagnosis?
Yeah.
And where that, I don't even have to go into it, but where that went. And, you know, is it easy for us as humans to say, yeah, this was the cause, and it was, this was like the magic bullet, or this was, of course it is. It's easier to reconcile. It's easier to justify. It's easier to place blame. But that's just not how most things work. I mean, it isn't. And when you think about now how they look at curing diabetes or curing cancer or any autoimmune disorder, it's not just about giving a pill. It's not just about changing one thing in your diet. It's sort of this holistic, all-inclusive approach to your health. Yeah. And so that is similar to all these other conditions that these children are suffering from. And you know, when you made the point about the endocannabinoid system, we still don't know what happens really in an autistic brain.
Yeah.
And if we could just put some research into the way those receptors and how medical cannabis may feed a deficiency or suppress an overreactive receptor, mm-hmm. I mean, that would be huge in trying to intervene much earlier when they have the autism diagnosis, instead of being a last resort when the child is 14 and the parents are saying, I have no choice but to look into a home for my child.
And it seems like when seeing the same sort of research that people were trying to do on cancer in the same realm, we actually know a lot about cancer at this point. We know a fair amount about seizures as well, but for some reason we're not allowing ourselves to like go as deep into looking at the endocannabinoid system as it relates to neurology and healing process and all those things mm-hmm. as we should. When it's like such a simple and available thing, you would think that if our goal is really to sort of have better care and to help improve the livelihood of these people, why would we not allow that? And that's where I always get stuck when I'm watching these things and looking at the way research gets done. Then you have to back out and say, well, then who's benefiting? Why if the patient's not benefiting in this situation, what's the prevention of that research?
No, I totally get it. And I think what's interesting about that is the government maintaining this Schedule I classification for cannabis and court case after court case saying we just don't recognize a medicinal value in cannabis, yet the U.S. government has a patent on cannabis to be used medically. So I'm not quite sure where the disconnect is or why. To be honest with you, why advocates within our political system or, you know, lawmakers who are actually for the legalization of, or at least the you know, having some continuity throughout the country for medicinal cannabis, why they aren't bringing that up, because I think it would connect a lot of dots.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, everybody's corrupt.
Well, and it is. I was just reading that in that article that I was reading this morning about, I think it was last week, where the bill that was proposed is, you know, I'm kind of thinking about how this could move and how this could move quickly. They were saying that the people who are likely to see the most business from this are the low end people in this supply chain.
Uh-huh.
And so that still doesn't necessarily solve the pharmaceutical, you know, use of it, because I've known plenty of people now who have been investing in CBD and THC products and you know, growers and stuff, because there's so much money to be made in it right now. And I think that probably is what's going to push these bills, is someone in sadly someone in politics is probably going to be getting lobbied by some of these companies. And but it's still not really getting down to the if the, you know, the lower quality people are going to be making the most money at this, it's still not, you know, getting to the point of affecting it from a pharmaceutical point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, I feel like that's sort of like a loaded topic, but back to the motivation being money, and maybe that is what would motivate the government to change the schedule, or at least, you know, legalize it in more states. I mean, if you take Oklahoma as an example, which is like in the Bible Belt, right? One of the most conservative states in the country, right next to Texas, which has no medicinal cannabis program at all.
Right.
They actually, right in the middle of filming, passed a medical cannabis law that was one of the most liberal in the country.
Is that right?
So essentially, Oklahoma, anyone really can get their medical marijuana card. And now you go into Oklahoma and there's a dispensary on every corner, just like there's a Starbucks on every corner. Now, the motivation behind that, the reason it was passed and that people voted for it, because the lawmaker proposing the bill said that the money that the government would get from the sale of medical cannabis would 100% go to the schools, which were in a dire situation.
Yeah.
And so you had all these parents coming out and voting, saying, the teachers can't be on strike anymore.
Yeah.
We want the quality of our schools to go up, and these teachers need to get paid. And this is where the funds need to go. This is where the taxes need to go. And that's how they got it passed. It had nothing to do with the fact that they thought there was, I mean, at least my feeling is that this wasn't an ethical issue for them.
No,
this was a means to an end, right? And now people are taking advantage of it, not only because they do realize that it has medicinal value, but because it also has economic value.
Yeah.
And they're capitalizing off that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is what will probably push it. I mean, cannabis is the only industry that thrived during the pandemic.
Yeah. That and alcohol.
One of the only industries, alcohol, right. But just carcinogen. But so, and the alcohol industry is also afraid of it.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's the one thing that I see going on too. It's similar to the way states were starting to open up, you know, with COVID, was they were no longer making sort of ethical or scientific, you know, rules about how things should sort of happen. It didn't really have anything to do with that. It was really economic for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I think that is also the part with some of these southern states or the middle of the country, is that there's a lot of struggle going on economically,
right.
and that, you know,
sure.
For certain states that didn't have much in the reserves, suddenly they were like, well, we don't have a choice. We have to reopen schools. We have to do all these things to get parents back to work and everything. So, but it feels like the same thing is probably going to happen, looking at the opportunity that cannabis has without really, and I'm not like, I like to, you know, say I'm open to just about any use medically that of anything that can be of benefit, because there are a lot of things over time that we just don't really understand. But I'm not like pro cannabis as a whole. I think there are some people who also have a lot of problems with that. And yet I also think that if we compare it to alcohol, it's nothing in comparison to the problems.
No. Because I mean, no one's died of a cannabis overdose,
right?
In the history of recording deaths from drug use and alcohol use. I mean, no one's ever died from overdosing cannabis. I mean,
right.
They may have gotten a little wacky and fallen asleep
while
they were seeing unicorns. But
right.
I think that one of the doctors that I've spoken to recently and very frequently works out of Jefferson Hospital, and they have their own, like a subset of the hospital that has a cannabis research center. And she, I think, puts it best when she says, you know, marijuana is neither good nor bad. It's how it is used.
Yeah.
And opioids are legal. They're prescribed by doctors, but you would never give them to a healthy 15-year-old.
Right.
The movie isn't promoting cannabis use among a well-adjusted, physically and neurologically healthy teen or child or young adult. These are kids who are sick and who are really struggling.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really short-sighted to just say, well, if you legalize it, or, you know, then everybody's going, all these kids are going to start using it. Well, kids already use it.
Yeah.
And kids already use opioids, and they take their parents' painkillers, and they take their friends' Adderall, and I mean, and they drink alcohol. I mean, there's always going to be that element, but you can't deny people who need a medicine something that's going to help them just because of the risk of somebody else abusing it. It's not the way the world works.
Yeah, and I know your group in the film is a small subset, but you get to see sort of firsthand how, say, the nasal spray, how quickly that can help things too. And that's one of the things that I think it's important to see what I've worked with these parents, so I know what it's like. But to see what happens day after day, hour after hour, with these parents and what they're managing, mm-hmm. and how it affects, you know, their entire life and their livelihood, and their community in some ways too, like just, you know, what they get sort of pulled into because of these kids. So to
and
see
their own mental health.
Yeah, and their own mental health, you know, and so that just, you know, these are little small things that can be done to basically improve, you know, that day-to-day, hour-to-hour experience with parents. And over time, you know, I think there are some parents, obviously, in the film who are, like, hoping for some improvement of verbal skills or some of those things. But I think at the end of the day, if they could just sort of enjoy being with them a little bit more,
right,
and have a little bit more peace in their home from it, mm-hmm. that's a huge win.
Yeah, I mean, that was the situation with the Zartlers, right? The family out of Texas. Kara's never going to be able to live on her own.
Right.
She, you know, they're still holding out hope that she's going to be able to speak one day, but she's 19 or 20 now. And when you have a child who for, you know, 8 or 9 years was continuously hitting themselves in the head and punching their face for hours on end, your goal is just to save their life.
Yeah.
It's not to obtain a normal life, because their life is never going to be normal. But, you know, they can't, that's like a horrific situation to live in and to have no way out. And to offer her an antipsychotic drug like they did when she was 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not really doing anything. That's just putting her in a vegetative state.
Right.
And that's no good either. So this is sort of, you know, this is something that works for them. And why should they not use it? Why shouldn't they use it?
Yeah.
What's the alternative? What is the government going to do when they decide to take Kara away from her parents? How are they going to handle her behavior or handle her health situation? They can't.
Yeah. And most of these parents end up having to be on some sort of government program anyway, right? To basically support whatever they need. And you would think that cannabis would be a lot cheaper than the antipsychotics and a lot of the other things that they're having to do. Maybe that will be a change. I mean,
but that's to your point. Like, maybe that's the problem.
Yeah.
It is a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. We tried to not get into that too much.
I know.
It's a larger issue, but healthcare could be saved in a lot of different ways if we were more proactive and not reactive.
Yeah.
It's a really difficult topic. We just hope that people watch the movie and that they spread the word, because I think once you witness what these parents are going through, then all of a sudden, you know, this whole obsession with, oh, it's only anecdotal evidence, all of a sudden the anecdotal evidence becomes a little more important than the scientific evidence.
Yeah. So for these parents who are, and you kind of get a little bit into this in the film, who are kind of working on this almost kind of underground movement where they're trying to share information about what's working and strains and ratios and all these things. Are there ways, are there things going on to start, you know, because I work with some people in functional medicine and some people who work with autistic kids and kids with seizures, is there anything going on where, you know, from a medical, you know, point of view where we can be involved to kind of help, you know, the movement to legalize state to state? Is there anything that you know about?
Well, I think that everybody needs, so it's hard for me to say like collectively what we can do except just, you know, just demand that when bills come up or bills are proposed, that this is a priority. I mean, there's so many things going on in the world right now. I think that the Biden administration promised that they were going to try to change the schedule in the first 100 days. I mean, there's so much going on, and I get it. I mean, we can't do everything at once, but it is the responsibility of the government to sort of, you know, there's a lot of people working for the government. We need to prioritize things, or designate things rather, designate issues to different people, because what's a priority for one family is not a priority for the other, but it doesn't make it any less valuable or the family any less vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, there just needs to be, when the next time the election comes, you just have to make sure that the lawmakers that you're voting for believe in changing the schedule, believe in supporting state programs as they are currently to provide safe access and oversight so that parents aren't left guessing and they're not left paying exorbitant prices for a medical marijuana card or for a doctor to give them a medical marijuana card, which, by the way, costs $200 a year in Pennsylvania. I don't know what it costs in other states, but it's a hefty bill. And plus that medicine itself, it isn't covered by insurance.
Yeah. And I think some of what's being, you know, done with the Biden administration has also to do with kind of racial equity and prison reform. Mm-hmm. So because it's, you know, a lot of the Schedule I status is tied directly to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you see anything, for anyone listening, watching, if you see anything like that, pay attention and see and find out what's going on with it in your state. I know there's some stuff going on, and I've talked to some of the people working to regulate here in Minnesota where I live. But and I know New York is starting to make some headway now, right?
Yes, they are.
So you know, there's some bigger places that I think that will lead some of this, and California has been for a while. But you know, I think it seems like a lot of the southern states are still fighting against this, I'm not sure if it's just southern states, but it seems to be more so.
Well, I think because that's where that political divide comes
in. The political divide.
So, yeah. So I think that, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, like you go back to a story like Oklahoma, where Oklahoma as a state, right, very much shares the values of some of the states that you're referring to, or some of the more conservative states, and they're getting it done.
Yeah.
Right.
Although Colorado, surprisingly, is very conservative. They seem to also
forefront. It took them a while. Like for medicinally, it took them a while to pass certain conditions so that even autism.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like a crapshoot. And that's an awful way for the government
to
regulate.
Run,
I mean, it just doesn't, it's kind of like, all right, well, whatever condition you want to, with no regard to people who are sitting there waiting, you know, and suffering in the interim. Like, why should the next generation not be able to benefit from, you know, not only the legalization, but the research? Because even if the schedule changes tomorrow, I mean, you're talking about decades before we really understand the potency of the plant and how it can be used in the most beneficial way.
Yeah.
So what is everybody waiting for? Just do it.
Yeah.
You know, and if it turns out that we're wrong in 10 years, we're not saying it's a free for all, just saying like, there's no other options for some of these families. So just let them have hope, because you don't say to a person who is suffering from cancer in hospice, I'm not going to give them morphine because it's wrong. And they might get, at that point, it's like, whatever makes them comfortable, because they're just, this is humane. This is the humane thing to do.
And this gets back to the mission of medicine and what it's supposed to be in the first place is, you know, basically creating a care system that does no harm. And also I think, helps to create ease when you know we're all going to have some sort of dis-ease in our existence, and trying to figure out ways to sort of either, you know, break through that, to bridge to getting better, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and in my work, I've always been very careful about, you know, the managing the risk part of things. And that's the one thing I feel like, you know, looking at the use of cannabis is like the lowest risk drug almost on the, you know, on the planet.
Yeah.
That we could use. And yet we're sort of holding it back, you know, for reasons I'm still, you know, miffed by. But I do feel like these conversations need to happen. People need to get comfortable with it. And I understand there are some people who still think that it's a drug. And once something negative gets put out there, it's sort of like the way, you know, Trump used Twitter or something. It's like once you say the wrong thing, it's hard to make it right. And I feel like that's sort of what went on for, you know, a good 50, 60 years here with cannabis. And it's hard to change the minds.
Yep. You can't put cooked spaghetti back in the box.
Exactly.
As my Italian husband likes to say.
Yeah. I'm so appreciative of the effort that you put into this, and for including me in the conversation as well. And we're gonna also have a conversation with one of the doctors who was doing some oversight with the film to get a little deeper into some of the more
the science
behind things too. So
yeah, she's great.
So,
and make sure you watch it. You can download it on Google Play and Apple TV and Amazon.
And I'll have links up in the show notes and on YouTube as well.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much, Erin.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having
me. Appreciate it. Erin O'Hearn, folks. Such a well-done documentary. If you work with children in a healthcare setting or would like to understand better the use of cannabis as medication for seizures and autism, and why it's important to push for reform for cannabis research and its use, I highly recommend this film. It's now streaming on Google Play, Apple TV, and Amazon, and you can find links here on the show notes. And if you'd like to watch us have this conversation, head over to Highway to Health Podcast channel on YouTube. And stay tuned for part two of this conversation about cannabis and pediatric care, where I have a conversation with Dr. Bonnie Goldstein, who advised on this documentary. She shares with me her story of how she became interested in the use of cannabis for pediatric conditions, as well as what she's learned from more than a decade of treating kids with it. Let me know what you thought of this topic and conversation. You can reach me anytime through the contact page at our website, highway2.health. That's highwayto.health. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Better with Dr. Erica, hosted by Dr. Erica, provides support and guidance in navigating stress-related challenges to transform your relationship to self-care. Each episode arms you with the tools needed to be better, do better, and live better. There was an incredible episode that you should check out called Touch and Connections as Tools for Healing and Better Mental Health. In this episode, her guest breaks down ways to use physical touch as a form of healing for trauma and grief. Check out Better with Dr. Erica on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.